On this edition of the program, everything you need to know about Super Tuesday, Joe Biden's approval rating, and the Supreme Court. It's all coming up.
This is made possible by Owe Them Bones, Daily Tech News Show, V, and Craig.
Welcome, everybody, to the Politics, Politics, Politics program for Super Tuesday, 2024, March 5th, 2024. This episode is coming out a day earlier than it normally would because we want to preview some of the things about Super Tuesday for you as it unfolds today and tonight, as well as get some thoughts about Joe Biden's approval rating and why nobody ever gets fired in the Biden administration. All of that with our friend, Michael Cohen. And before we do that, I do want to give you guys a little heads up on the schedule this week. We're a little off, right? Obviously, this is early. The big breakdown of the results for Super Tuesday, if you want the granular deep dive into it, that's going to be on our Patreon bonus on Thursday. Obviously, if there's big news, then we will talk about it on Friday as well. But if you just want the nitty gritty, let's go through each and every state, blah, 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 the delegate race. You want that? That's going to be Patreon this week. On the other hand, on Friday, we are going to be breaking down what the Biden administration believes is the start to their communication with the people of America to reelect him in 2024. And that is the State of the Union. They have highlighted this State of the Union for at least a month and a half. They have pointed to it as the beginning of them really laying out their plan to the nation. And so I want to take time with it. So Friday is going to be me putting on my best Howard Mortman of C-SPAN's The Weekly hat, and we will just be going through clips of the State of the Union and where I think it echoes various State of the Unions of the past and strategically where I believe it's going. Will this be Biden's last? We will all find out throughout this year. But let's go ahead and bring in our friend Michael Cohen. On the eve of Super Tuesday and beyond, we bring back one of our favorites, Michael Cohen, the man who wrote the book on the modern political campaign. Welcome back to the show, friend.
Thank you, sir. And happy birthday to Justin. Next tomorrow, man. Happy Erev birthday.
That's it. That's it. No, yeah. Thank you very much. It is always good. Periodically, my birthday falls on Super Tuesday. I could only... I could have hoped that we had a more exciting one, which we will not have a particularly exciting Super Tuesday, but
not really.
But we might get a dropout that has not happened, did not happen after New Hampshire, did not happen after South Carolina. Do you expect that Nikki Haley will suspend her campaign after what should be a delegate drubbing on Tuesday night?
Yeah, it's time. You know, the barred permanently shirt, you know, been there, done that, bought the t-shirt.
Yeah.
And it's time. I mean, she won DC, which says everything you need to know about the Haley campaign.
Yeah.
It's here. The end game is here, and she's going to get dusted tomorrow. And there are places where she might be able to have a good showing. I mean, you know, Virginia, mm-hmm. you know, there's Massachusetts, like some other places, but she's not going to have enough to really go forward in any real kind of way. So I think tomorrow is the end of the campaign. But the more important question, of course, is not that. It's will she endorse?
Yeah.
And I think I think the answer is no. I think Nikki is going to do the thing. I think she's been inching towards it in her fundraising emails, inching toward it in her speeches. And then on Meet the Press yesterday, kind of dropped the bomb that this is a different GOP and she's no longer bound and she's going to make her own decision. Okay.
You want to know what? I actually disagree with you on this. I have Zapruder'd this clip. Okay. I have watched every second of that clip on Meet the Press. And also I feel like I've ingested enough Haley speech to know that she's very defensive as a talker. She doesn't quite have the over lawyerly way that she never wants to get painted into a corner. So she'll pivot. But we've seen what happened with the slavery comment, the slavery gaffe. She got boxed into that, not because she was saying anything outrageous, but because she was trying not to get caught in a trap that happened in these primary Q&As where you do seven of them in a day. There's always somebody, sometimes they're from another campaign, sometimes they're pranksters, whatever, that are asking these when did you stop beating your wife questions, and you got to figure out a way to answer it. And if you're not super deft on your feet, of which she's not, then you get yourself into trouble. So back to this Meet the Press clip. She says, she's asked twice by Kirsten Welker, the new host, are you bound by the agreement? And she first says, well, the pledge that I took was to get on the stage, and then goes into a digression about also it's not the same GOP as it was then.
Look at the shiny ball.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
But then
she says,
okay, go ahead.
Yeah. The question is, so you're not bound. And Nikki Haley says, no, but what I, this is just my intention or assumption from it. When she says no, she's talking about what I think Nikki Haley cares the most about, which is you're not going to back me into saying that I'm quitting. Because if I say I'm bound by it, then I'm essentially saying I'm quitting. If I say I'm not bound by it, then I'm quitting, but I'm also leaving the Republican Party. So there's no win for her. So she's denying the premise of it. And here's the big thing is earlier in that clip.
I love how far you've gone with this. This is great.
Earlier in the clip, when she's first asked about it, she says, I have a lot of problems with Donald Trump. I have more problems with Joe Biden. And so that to me, that gives the game away. That's her. Until she puts them on parity, then you can't do anything but assume that she's going to endorse. And that's what I expect, because also she's Nikki Haley. Like, she's not the bold, say what you will about Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney comes from a family that is secured in its wealth and influence in a part of the country. They are connected the world over. She can say, whatever, sayonara Republican politics. I'm going to make my money on boards for the rest of my life anyway. Nikki Haley has always gone through the path of least resistance. And right now, the path of least resistance is to endorse and be a Never Trump whisperer.
You ready?
Go.
Okay. She was making a lot of money working for Boeing and elsewhere. What makes you think that she sees a future for her within the current rubric of what the GOP is and understands that she's never going to be Trump's girl? She had a shot at that and she decided not to be. And so now she's in a situation where she says, okay, the only way for me to really win is for Trump to lose. Is her real goal to win the presidency or to win the next time? And I think that she understands right now that Trump is in her way. She's not going to be able to beat him. And that what she really wants is to have a shot next time in a post-Trump world, which may or may not exist. This may be a construction in her own mind of what the only path for her, because she understands that there's not a real path for her now. So what does she do? She decides, number one, I'm going to be, myself. I'm going to go ahead and tell people what I think of Trump. I'm not going to endorse, but I'm also going to say, you know what? I just might vote for him in November. I'm going to let the campaign play out. Let it happen.
But you can't be cute through the convention. At the convention, you're going to have...
Who's saying she's going?
I mean,
who's saying she's going?
why are you winning these delegates if you don't want influence on either the
party? She knows she's not going to have influence.
Then why is she in the race? I mean, this is my problem. And this is the reason. And look, I only blame Nikki Haley for this, is that now we are through the looking glass where even people who obsess about politics, and like normally the physics are pretty simple. Money go up, voter sentiment go up. If either go down, then it goes down. So she does have enough money. And so there is the case for that. Yeah. Here's my case for why she is going to come home, and it is the money. And this is something that I have heard from other people around the conservative echo chamber. Mm-hmm. What's Trump's two biggest weaknesses going into November?
Two?
Yeah.
You're going to limit it to two?
Give me two on the Republican side. So just problems within his own, things that he needs to tend to internally before we even get to what the Democrats are going to try to do to him.
Okay. Moderates and complacency.
Okay.
I mean, I would say moderates. I mean, there's enough people in the party that he said, well, we're 100% MAGA now, which is really not true. Tony Fabrizio, my former boss, has done some excellent polling on this, which has showed the party is actually five different parties, which is a coalition, one of them, which is MAGA.
Yep.
In his speech just this past week, Trump said that 97 to 100% is MAGA, but he also let go that he said he's heard 47% of the party is MAGA.
Yeah.
And of course, his point of view is, no, they're all mine.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's the biggest problem for him. The second biggest problem is complacency. If you look at the polling for the past several months, he's been beating Biden. And so his people don't show up when they think that they're just going to win. It's like anything that actually results back to usual politics physics, which is if your people are excited and they feel like they have to be there, they're going to be there. If they don't feel like they have to be there, they might just not show up. So I think that those are two of the biggest problems right now.
I would agree with both of them. I would lump them as one. And I would say that the other one is money. The man needs money. They are ripping through.
I don't think so. I disagree.
Okay. So you disagree.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. But I do. I think the fact of the matter is Trump has been outspent and won the presidency,
sure,
you know, the first time. Second time, yeah, he was outspent, but he didn't win for other reasons. So I don't know that there's enough money that he needs to be able to communicate. I think Trump can get on TV and in your social media feed whenever he wants. I think they'll have enough money. Yeah.
So let me indulge me on this. Let's say that money is a problem. Yeah. Let's say that they internally believe that money is a problem.
Of course they will. The professionals will always believe they don't have enough money.
There we go.
Yeah.
Nikki Haley solves both. Nikki Haley talks to moderates. Nikki Haley is again, she will be the person to tell the suburbs of Atlanta and Nevada and Arizona that it's your thumb and your forefinger, and you limber them up and then you pinch up on your nose and then hit the red button. That's if she is willing to do that, she's a tremendous utility. And if she wants a future in the Republican Party, regardless of whether or not the party is 15% MAGA, 20% MAGA, 40% MAGA, there's a portion that can deny you if they hate you. And Nikki Haley has done enough to dance right up to the shores of the Liz Cheney, Mitt Romney land for which you can never come back from. But
Chris Christie.
And as always, come back. I think that she's still in a position now where, look, suspends her campaign in Super Tuesday. And then a couple weeks later, she does one of these interviews and it's, and her big thing is like, look, I meant everything I said on the campaign trail. That's why primaries matter. That's why it's a shame the Democrats aren't doing a primary, because they should have. There's a lot of conversations. I'll let them. I'm glad that they haven't resolved them by the time. She can still put on her red pantsuit and be a huge thing. If she's not, then I do think that she's on the outs. And to me, her future is not in the Republican Party.
I think everything that you said there is plausible,
and
right, and understandable. The real question is who is Nikki Haley? We don't know. We've been through an entire primary.
Yeah.
We have no idea who this person is. We don't know what to believe from her. We see on the one hand speeches and emails and texts and then shirts that are saying barred permanently and all this kind of stuff, right? But we also know that Trump, even though he will bash the hell out of his opponents, will welcome them back into the fold when it suits him, right? So there is a path. I get it. My point of view is I don't think that she's ever going to be the best MAGA candidate for her to run in 4 years.
I agree.
I don't see that happening.
Never going to happen.
And I don't think that. And I think she understands that. And I also think that the people that she would, quote unquote, bring along are going to fall back to Biden. They're Biden voters who were looking for a pathway to stay in the GOP. And they left in 2020. And Nikki Haley brought a few of them back. They're going to leave again once they realize that she's full of shit. So what it's going to come down to is this is, well, does Haley then endorse Trump after saying all of the things that you want to hear if you're one of me, barred permanently and all this other stuff? How do you say, okay, well, then come back? I think that educated voters, which is her base, are a lot of things. They're pompous. They maybe make too much money, but they're not stupid. And so they'll look at this and they'll say, you know what? Nikki Haley, you're not Nikki Haley. You're not the Nikki Haley I wanted you to be. I'm done with you. And then she doesn't bring anyone along, including herself. And all she does is undermine her post-politics lifestyle, which is working on boards and doing other things. I don't see it working for her. I think the only real path for her is a Trump flame out, which is what I've been talking now for three cycles. It may never happen, but I think that's legitimately the only path for a Nikki Haley presidency is for Trump to basically flame out again. Other than that, I think every other choice that she could make to stay is a bad choice.
We are agreed on most things. We are disagreed on this because I do think that it is the most likely path for her to go back, because we both know that by the time that November rolls around, unless Nikki Haley's the vice president, and even then to a vanishing amount, this isn't going to be about Nikki Haley. This isn't going to be about anybody but Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Here's the real reason why I wanted to have you on. This is your update, brought to you by TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Again, if you want the big breakdown of all the results for Super Tuesday, now's the time. Get on that $3 level. And, you know, for the price of buying me a cup of coffee, if you like this show and you'd buy me a cup of coffee each week for me to sit in your car and talk to you for another hour and a half, 2 hours, beyond our regular schedule, well, you know, it's a place to go. And this is the time that you want to do it, because I don't know whether or not we're going to get into the weeds on election results stuff until November. So if you're an election results guy and I am a election results guy, well, come on. The water's fine. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. $3 level gets you 2 bonus episodes each and every week. Set it and forget it. Put the podcast feed in the podcatcher of your choice. Never think about it again. Let's get into the stuff that we didn't cover. Although we did touch on this in our conversation with Mr. Michael Cohen. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously overturned state-led attempts to block Donald Trump from the presidential candidacy in 2024 via an anti-insurrection clause of the Constitution. This impacted a specific case in Colorado and similar challenges in other states. Colorado had excluded Trump from its Republican primary, citing his alleged incitement of the 2021 Capitol riot. But the court ruled this power belongs exclusively to Congress. This decision enables Trump to participate in the upcoming Colorado primary today and positions him as the leading contender for the Republican nomination. The ruling emphasized that only Congress has the authority to enforce the 14th Amendment's provision against federal officials, thus preventing states from disqualifying candidates based on alleged insurrection involvement. This clarifies the law, with the court seeking to maintain a uniform electoral process across all states, averting a fragmented approach to candidate eligibility. Legal experts highlighted the decision's broader implications, suggesting it might influence future constitutional interpretations, emphasizing the challenge it poses to congressional action amid partisan
deadlock. This was not a surprise, this ruling. Any legal person worth their salt had said that this was going to be ruled in Trump's favor. The only question was, would it be unanimous? And it was unanimous. So the disagreement on the court did not seem to be the decision, but rather the majority opinion. So there was a majority opinion wrote, and then the liberal justices wrote another opinion because everybody was in the majority. So they wrote another opinion, and then Amy Coney Barrett wrote, why don't both y'all settle down opinion, essentially saying we need to take the temperature of the country down, not up. But look, Trump was going to be on that ballot. There's no way that the Supreme Court was going to take a leading candidate off the ballot for something like that. Vice President Kamala Harris called this week for an immediate ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas conflict during a commemoration event in Alabama, emphasizing the need to alleviate the humanitarian crisis. She advocated for a six-week pause to facilitate the release of Israeli hostages held by Hamas and to increase the flow of aid into Gaza, labeling the situation a quote-unquote humanitarian catastrophe. Harris's comments reflect the shift in the Biden administration's stance, with increased direct calls for a ceasefire following the devastating October 7th Hamas attacks on Israel. This appeal comes alongside the U.S. initiating airdrops of humanitarian aid into Gaza. So a few things here that I want to point out. Number one, obviously, this is a political problem for Joe Biden. 100,000 people voted uncommitted in Michigan. The left flank is angry. The White House does not believe that they are getting the kind of cooperation from the Netanyahu government. And so they are pushing things forward in any way that they can that doesn't make them seem sufficiently anti-Israel as they continue to prosecute this war against Hamas in Gaza that has had breathtaking humanitarian loss of life. Something else that is currently happening, and that is the visit from Benny Gantz. He is an Israeli cabinet member and a big critic of Netanyahu. Now, something that, again, my biggest frustration with this particular moment in time when it comes to Israel and Hamas is that you have a lot of people that are, I think, good-hearted, but they are trying to play catch-up. They don't really care about this region. They care about the humanitarian loss of life that has happened, and so they are trying to process their feelings. But, you know, Benny Gantz is somebody that wants Netanyahu out of politics forever, probably in prison. Benny Gantz is not aligned with the settler wing of the Knesset, which is a group of people that Netanyahu didn't want anything to do with until he absolutely had to make a deal with them to stay in power and stay out of jail because he's got these corruption charges. But Benny Gantz was side by side with Netanyahu throughout all this. Now, there is no doubt that there is a tremendous range of opinions amongst Israelis about how to prosecute this war. I do think that the baseline, at least from what I have read, is that Israel's number one preoccupation, as it tends to always be, is security. But Gantz coming to America, which is what's going to happen, and negotiating with the White House without Netanyahu's permission, demonstrates that that has now bubbled up to an international level. I remind everybody, as I've said before on this show and many, many other places, that the thing that normally happens in a Israeli military exercise into either the West Bank or Gaza is that there is some inciting event. Israel moves in.
And then usually within days or weeks, the international community, up to and including America, says, knock it off. That's enough. We have had a much longer time frame here because October 7th was so bloody. But I do think that we are starting to see gravity on this, at least in terms of history manifest. Let's swing back to domestic politics. Former Maryland Governor Larry Hogan has announced his entry into that state Senate race, but he revealed his motivation this week. The motivation was that former President Donald Trump scuttled a bipartisan border bill. Hogan, a Republican and frequent critic of Trump, stated that his decision was sparked by the failure of legislation that aimed to secure the border and provide funding for international allies, which he saw as a betrayal of Republican values. The bill's defeat, urged by Trump to prevent a political win for Joe Biden, convinced Hogan to pursue a Senate seat, emphasizing the need for leadership that prioritizes country over party. Hogan's campaign aims to bring a voice to the Senate that focuses on bipartisan solutions and the national interest, rejecting the current partisan approach. Despite previous disinterest in his Senate career, encouragement from influential figures, including Mitch McConnell, Steve Daines, Mike Pence, and former President George W. Bush, swayed Hogan. Bush's endorsement, highlighting Hogan's potential to contribute a vital perspective toward a more inclusive Reagan-esque Republican Party, played a significant role in his decision to run. Here's the bizarre world of politics that we live in. An anti-Trump voice in Maryland is going to give Republicans the Senate. Whatever lead the Republicans come out of this race with, it will be because of seats like Maryland, which was not going to go to the Republicans. But Larry Hogan runs so far ahead of any other Republican in that state. And with stuff like this, you're going to be sure that he continues to do so. TakePoliticsSeriously.com is where you need to go. Go ahead. Come on. Be a friend. Be a pal. Get all the Super Tuesday breakdown. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Now, back to Michael Cohen. Because we've had a lot of these apocalyptic polls for Biden 24. We have a lot of...
going to the glasses.
Yeah, a thing came out today about Biden's last campaign. I think it was the New Yorker that wrote about it.
It'll take you an hour and a half if you just listen to it by audio.
And it's like, to say rough. That the Biden campaign right now is sure of themselves would be a way that you could politely not say arrogant. And for a campaign that has gigantic flashing warning signs like we are seeing right now, I don't know exactly how chesty I would be in that particular scenario. But here's the biggest thing. And even as the New York Times Siena poll, which has never been a great poll for Donald Trump, shows him polling higher than he ever has in the year since they've started doing it, the core is this: Joe Biden's approval rating. It's not that Donald Trump is particularly more, he's marginally more popular than he was, but it's that Joe Biden is less popular than he was. He's less popular with his own base. He's less popular with independents. And even those voters that made him the president in 2020, the Republicans that were so sick of Donald Trump and really disagreed with how he handled COVID, they don't particularly like him anymore. So yes, these voters might eventually go back and say, hey, Nikki Haley, you're a fake. But are they going to be running back across the street to a candidate that I think they thought was more moderate than he wound up governing as? And is who knows where he's going to be on stuff like in the Middle East, where, look, if he goes to the left on that and tries to please his progressive flank, then he's going to have a whole new problem with voters on the center of this. Tell me about your
zero sum game.
Tell me about your thoughts here on Biden's approval rating.
Okay, I think some of the talk about approval ratings right now is based upon the history of approval rating as a metric.
Yeah,
okay. This goes way back. I mean, back to my former colleagues over at Gallup, and then way before my time. which is old, right? I mean, if Biden is old, I'm relatively old, and this polling is extremely old, yeah. right? I mean, that's why I'm in a basement tonight, today, because I want to make sure that we are celebrating Biden, you know, and
there we go. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So here we are. All right. Anyway, I think what really comes down to is you need to look at polling a little differently now than you would normally do, because of the polarization, and also because you have two presidents running against each other.
Yeah.
This is not just a D's versus R's. This is the death match.
Yeah.
Right. And so you have a group of Republicans who would never, ever vote for Biden, even though 10, 15 years ago, they would vote for a Democrat.
Yeah.
And it's not because of Biden, but it's because of the polarization that we're living under right now. Same thing with the Democrats looking the other way. So Biden's potential for approval is probably somewhere in the low to mid 50s. He's not there right now. He's actually in the mid 30s, which is terrible, which actually tells you a lot about where you're coming from, which is what's going on in Gaza, what's going on at the border, what's going on with the economy, what's going on with your grocery bill, what's going on with the fact that it's gray outside today instead of blue. I mean, there are a ton of different reasons why normally you would see an approval rating down, but in previous years, instead of it being in the 50s and you're now somewhere in the 40s and that's in trouble, now you're in the 40s and you know, you should be in the 40s, but now you're in the 30s and you're in trouble. And so the generic ballot, when you're looking at the same polls, is dead even.
Yeah.
So right now, you know, if you take generic Democrat versus generic Republican, you end up with nothing, right? Yeah. You also see polling where it says Trump versus Biden, Kennedy, Weston Stein, and Beavis and Butthead, and anyone
everybody else
you put on the list. Trump wins that because Trump always wins when there's a field that is, you know, all over the place, right? Yeah. So the question really becomes, what is going on with these numbers? And I think right now, when you're looking at this, you have on the one hand, Trump winning, but you also have the generic ballot dead even, which means that there is room for Biden to grow back into a competitive race, even though it's close enough and you're within the margin of error on most of these polls. But also remember, right now, we are polling registered voters.
Yes.
We are not polling likely voters, which are the most likely people to show up on election day. Registered voters is basically the universe of people who are ready to go out and vote on any given election. All right. This is not even adults.
Yeah.
We're past a time where we were doing approval ratings on just adults. So we're moving the needle closer. When we get to post-convention, we'll be talking about likely voters. When we get to those numbers, that's when you start the freak out if you're a Democrat. If Biden's numbers are still pretty low and we're still polling likely voters at that point, that's when you're going to start seeing panic buttons pushed. And that's when you can see the border close and all kinds of crazy stuff that, you know, and yeah, I mean, they'll start throwing things at the wall on this blank wall over here. It'll be all blotchy with stuff to try and make sure that something's going to stick. So you have to understand that that's what's going on right now. We are in a situation where, number one, we have, you know, we're in the preseason right now, and we also have polarization. And that's the way I put it right now.
So the Biden campaign seems to believe that their campaign has not even begun. The campaign is beginning with the State of the Union, that they are going to use the bully pulpit to demonstrate, well, this is really the man. He's in control. He is going to make these big decisions. The question that I have with it is, like, right now, he has a real inability to capture a narrative on any of the things that people are the loudest about. He's in this nickel and diming messaging with the economy, where he's going after greedy big businesses on shrinkflation and drip pricing, which is, you know, this is the stuff. This is like Elizabeth Warren's off pitch is the kind of stuff that he's putting out there as his main economic message on Gaza. Right. He can either please one side or the other, but spoiler alert for everything that's happened in the Middle East forever, it tends to be a bit of a zero sum game. There's no way you can triangulate it. Everybody in the West has tried forever. It always pisses somebody off. And the other side is the border, which he's totally ignored this for the vast majority. And now he's relying on this very inside DC. Well, we had a bipartisan thing. What you have to understand is that Senator Lankford is actually a really staunch Republican, and Mitch McConnell said, and then we did a thing, but McCarthy got, it's like, you're not going to sell that to somebody that's upset about the border when you're running against the border man who's been talking about the border since before he ran, and you made famous for stuff he said about the border. So it's like, I don't know what his moves are unless he sells a different version of reality than we are looking at, which is always possible, but I don't know. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, the problem is that he's thinking 20th century thinking. And like, while, you know, I'm a diehard Knicks fan, you know, it's not the 1990s anymore. All right.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not. And so the idea that, you know, America is going to gather around the TV set together and watch the, you know, speech and then watch the response and then have a deliberative, you know, conversation among families and then talk to other people they know. And then to feel like, oh, okay, we're going to really think about this. No, most people are not going to watch this. The people who are going to watch this are going to be people who are for you or against you. Some of them will catch it on TikTok and other social media. And so you need, more than anything else, moments.
Yeah.
You need moments that can be clippable and shareable, and some moment where the Republicans stand up and go, rah, rah, rah,
yeah,
and Biden clips off something that you wouldn't have expected because he's had 48 hours of sleep and a vitamin B12 shot in his ass, you know, 72 hours yeah. before, so and he's ready to
he's
go,
juiced,
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah, Grandpa is awake.
Yeah.
And so you need a situation where he has a moment where he's like, number one, I'm not old, or I am old, and I'm old enough to know you guys are idiots, and this is why.
Yeah.
And, you know, and really clip off a few real zingers that he's practiced 1,000 times between January and now so that they're in his soul and that he can basically rip them up. But there's also going to be a moment where, does Biden seem old? Is he up too late? You know, is this speech too big for him? And can he still deliver? So I think there's two ways, right? Number one, there's a narrative, which you're talking about, which is, does he have any reason to win this race on the things that people care about? And I'm sure he'll have some answers to these things. We'll see how it goes. But number two, the biggest thing that actually people don't approve of is that he's old.
Yeah.
And so if he needs to show up and not be old, like he's still going to have gray hair like I do, but he needs to be like awake and be able to like knock back when they come after him, because you know the Republicans are going to start being real chatty in this one, especially when he talks about the border. So
yeah,
I think there's two pieces of this. There's the performative piece of this, which he needs to look great. And then there's the substantive piece of this, which, okay, 10% of the population is going to look for some answer. But the narrative needs to be, look, we brought America back from the brink. We're back. And the only thing that can hurt us is us. And so if he can sell that, because that's the thing that he's been selling all the time, he needs to remind people why people voted for him. But if he gets into a laundry list of things like Bill Clinton would do,
yeah,
it's not great for him. And the thing that you're talking about, which is, you know, this whole business about, you know, Senator Lankford and this and that, he needs to make sure that he doesn't think he's a senator. Like, he needs to be reminded that he's the president of the United States. And a president of the United States does not talk about Senator Lankford. Senator Lankford's a good man. He's worked really hard, and he's a good person that you'd definitely vote for if you're from his home state. But nobody knows who in the world that guy is.
No.
And there's no reason to make him famous. And there's no reason to make him the reason why the border failed, because we didn't listen to Senator Lankford. Okay. So, I mean, you know, you have to pull all of this together, but it's a really high bar, because the audience is going to be as small as it could be.
Yeah. Again, I think you're right that this is ultimately just going to live cut up in various different, I'm going to edit that out.
Don't do that. No, go next. I'll say it every 2 minutes.
That's fine. Look, I don't quite know where, you know, aside from TikTok, social media, and cable news where no matter what Joe Biden says, it will be rhapsodized on MSNBC. It'll be savaged on Fox sure. News, and it will be lightly applauded on CNN. That we pretty much know the baseline for it. You're going to have all the surrogates that are out there that are going to say the things that are appropriate to the moment. I don't know if America's listening. And that's the biggest, and beyond yeah. to either folk, to either candidate. And that's the only thing that, like, yes, we're early. Yes, we're not polling likely voters. Yes, there's a lot that could change. But will it? We have 100% name ID. We have on the job training for both. Who's really confused on what it's going to be? And if this election is on anything other than, oh my God, the economy is amazing in November, I think Biden's everything else on this list is not great for him. He's fighting on a foreign territory for all of it. If he thinks he's going to win on age or the border, like, get a clue. It's not happening. Yeah. You can mitigate both. You can do your best to create a narrative that explains both. But I think every moment that they go, yeah, but Trump messed up a speech. Yeah, but Trump does seven times the amount of events. He's giving you seven times the amount of tape. And nobody, if you actually watch him speak, cringes when he screws something up. Like they do when Biden happens. Like that's.
Oh, I mean, except for when he said Obama and there was no clapping afterwards.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
I mean, it kind of caught him a couple of times. Yeah.
And in general, yeah. He talks a lot. And so there yeah. is more it's of a jagged. Leeway. There's more yeah. of a leeway for mistakes than Biden, who doesn't talk all that much and right. does have these mistakes. I don't think that doing the yeah, but Trump on that, or even playing on the border. I don't know. We talked yesterday. My unsolicited note for the Biden reelect is you need a name for what's happened over the last 4 years. Right. Call it the great whatever. Make it antiseptic. You don't want to call it an invasion, but you want something that whenever a Republican says invasion, you can say, stop it. That's offensive. It's the blank, whatever. Focus test it and figure out if something that's good. So you can say, why are things different? Because Trump never had to face this. I had to face
it's a COVID.
This.
I mean, the answer here is it's a COVID rebound. I mean, that's what it comes down
so,
to.
So yeah, and you know, pin it on that.
From and, COVID, and, yeah. there, and there you go. There was a lot of people who were going to migrate during COVID and said they waited, and now they're all here. So now we need to take care of it all at once instead of taking care of it over a number of years. And that's a fair answer to this. You know, they were slow to it, but here's the thing. That's not what Biden's going to run on.
No. I
mean, Biden's going to run on things like democracy, like, you know, fascism. He's going to run on these big things that I don't know if he can pull the American people up to where he wants them to be, talking about these sort of high level, you know, kind of issues, as opposed to I'm seeing, you know, murders in my hometown from migrants.
Yeah.
I'm seeing high prices at, you know, Giant or Safeway.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, those are the kinds of things that are touching people. So if he can't figure out answers to those and they hold him responsible for it, at the very least, it might keep some people off the field in November. And maybe he might lose a couple to a third party candidate that seems plausible, you know, or at least somebody that they have someone to write in for.
Do you have an explanation for why they haven't just flooded the entire zone on women's health? Because that to me, Every morning, don't even say Roe. Don't even say abortion. Just say women's health. Women's health. This is a crisis of women's health. Like, say it once in the morning, three or four times at lunch, and seven times right. at dinner. If you're not defining,
they should be having events every day.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not defining it on yeah. this, then what are you doing? This is your natural advantage.
Absolutely. And not only that, but with the IVF stuff, I mean, he should be talking about it every single day and not getting off of that. I think it will be a part of the campaign. I also believe that if you listen to what the campaign has been saying, or at least people on the campaign have been saying, they don't believe anyone's paying attention.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. Number one, we all know who the candidates are going to be. We hate those candidates.
Yes.
When you hate something, you avoid it.
Yes.
All right. Unless you either want to go and fight about it, and there are people and there's a place for it. It's called X.
Yeah.
And that's when they go to fight.
Yes.
But most people do not want to fight about politics. Most people want to you know, ignore it until they have to and then go vote. This is worse than it's ever been because they don't like their candidates. Even, you know, parts, most of, you know, Democrats don't like their candidate. Some of the GOP don't like their candidate enough to make sure that, you know, independents don't like any of them.
Yeah.
So they're avoiding it. So the question is when do you start to engage on issues and give the other side an opportunity to respond? So for example, if you decide to make every single day between now and November about abortion or IVF, well, Trump has already taken IVF off the table. Okay. Right. So he's got 6 months to figure out, okay, between now and then, how can I get closer to where the median voter is going to be? And his answer may just be, it's the states and I don't care. Like, and that's the current baseline. So he would line himself up with the current baseline. And so this is essentially what you were talking about with Elizabeth Warren, except when she was running for president.
Yeah.
When she was running for president, she had a plan for healthcare, right? They killed the plan and then they killed the candidate.
Yeah.
This is the same situation. So they don't want to get too caught up in one issue, but they want to make sure that they've got that enough and they know what, that they're right on it so they could deploy it in places where it will really matter in November. That's the theory of the case. It may or may not be right. Yeah. But again, they don't have an overall strategy other than Trump bad. And so beyond Trump bad, which we all know, or even people in the party say, yeah, he's bad, but I'm going to vote for him anyway because Biden worse.
Yeah.
You know, this is where we are right now. And I think Biden needs to figure out another way to connect with the American people. And I don't know if he believes that the soul of America is still interested in what he's selling, but we're going to find more on Thursday.
I mean, some of the polls, I think the CBS poll that came out yesterday, and you've seen it correlate with the New York Times one, is that the fascism argument is not sticking. Like even to people who believe that Donald Trump tried to stay president, there is a majority or a significant portion that say, well, he did try to stay president, but he mostly did it legally or like, you know, we're getting smaller and smaller. And how do you factor in this where we've seen enough of it for long enough that the more Donald Trump is in legal peril, the more people support him. And by people, I don't just mean Republicans. I mean, independents and some Democrats that are, it's hard to say that on some level, his argument that this is lawfare, this is not what America does. You don't persecute a candidate going into an election year is sticking.
Well, and today he got a little bit of help on that, right?
Yeah.
So the Supreme Court voted 9-0 to keep him on the ballot in Colorado. So, you know, they're going to be stuck in a situation where there are some cases that seem like they might be real.
Yeah.
Other ones might seem a little bullshitty. So I think to a real extent, you know, that stuff is going to play itself out over the year. It sounds like the Supreme Court doesn't want any piece of this at all. So they're going to delay all the major stuff. So I think you're going to see some of that receding. Like, I think it really helped him in the primary. It was a rally effect. It was almost like he went to go and invade Iran.
Yes.
And they went and then rallied around the flag. And all of a sudden, he now is like 85% approval. Like, this is the same thing that what happened here. Like, people were coming for our guy. Well, bullshit. We're supporting him and clearing the field for him. We're going to go after Biden and we're going to get our guy back in there. And so I think that that's really how people are looking at it on the Republican side. So, I mean, from my perspective, when you're looking at this, I mean, the law stuff is going to recede because eventually they're going to get to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court's going to be like, ah, man, you know, we're pretty booked. We got a whole bunch of other cases. You know, we've got eminent domain stuff. We got other stuff we got to deal with. We're out.
Well, and that's, you know, the case that is definitely going to happen and we're definitely going to get a ruling on is probably the weakest one. The Stormy Daniels redux in New York, where I think every moment
about Stormy Daniels since 2015. I mean,
you know. every moment that Trump is on, you know, in a New York courtroom and you're covering that 24/7, like it's the OJ case. I don't think it's a negative for him. I think it's a positive.
Oh, it is a positive. And here's the thing. If you're saying that these two guys are really old, one of them is banging
Stormy Daniels. Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Okay. And the other one is talking about having sex with his wife and it's really creepy.
Yes.
Okay. So between the two of them, like virility, I think advantaged Trump.
Yes.
Right. And
yes.
So, does it really help anybody? You know, but if it helps anyone, it definitely helps Trump. Yeah, no doubt.
Well, that, and now I don't know if you're, you know, Susie Wiles and Chris LaCivita in the Trump campaign, are you hoping that Fani Willis is thrown off the case or that her and Nathan Wade stay on it? Because I kind of feel like you really can't lose at this point. They've been so thoroughly debased in this whole process that them staying on and reminding everybody what happened might be the better outcome.
Oh, absolutely. I think Trump right now looks at that and says, I cannot lose this case now.
Yeah.
There's no prayer. When this goes before a jury, I am absolutely going to win this case. In fact, he would probably want this thing to go to a jury so that he could win. Like he feels, I'm sure, looking at this, that it's a total shit show in Georgia.
Yeah.
And oh my God, I can't believe, you know, this prosecutor, this is fantastic. I have people who are texting me who want the death penalty for her. And it's like, you know, I mean, that's the apocalyptic that I'm getting for people. I have a group chat called the Malarkey Chat.
Okay.
And in the Malarkey Chat, a very, very good friend of mine and former roommate said, she should have the death penalty.
So, because she screwed this up so bad.
And, because she screwed up so badly,
yeah.
And is so obviously screwed this up. And I mean, now you got an ex-boyfriend. There's nothing better for Trump than when he's living in a tabloid story and the tabloid people, and it's not about him,
yes.
Right? I mean, he's essentially the protagonist in this tabloid story. He's the one who's saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're telling me those two were together?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, got it. And okay, that, good. You're like, you guys are coming after me and making money off of this? Great. Perfect.
So that essentially leads the two federal cases, and those are the most delayable. People keep talking about this.
They're never going to see the light of day.
Yeah. People keep talking about this documents case is going to happen. I'm like, you know, the amount that you have the ability to challenge and re-challenge the admissibility of these documents, I don't know. I they have a friendly judge in that case. And then meanwhile, the January 6th case, we're already off to a 3-month delay because the Supreme Court is going to hear it in the summer. So are they going to really do the hurry up offense on that case? You know, cause that I think is going to play into his hands more that, oh, well they need to rush this through. They need to make
sure to rush this through. Right.
Yeah.
Right. No. Yeah. I think the legal system is off the table. I mean, I've been saying this actually for the past 5 years now, which is you're not going to get Trump within the context of an election. There's no way. I mean, because there was no case out there that was going to be, you know, decided by the time that voters are going to do it.
Yeah.
No one's going to say, if you're a Democrat, you should be looking in the mirror this morning and saying, no one's going to save us but ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay. The election system is going to have to work its way. And if you lose this election, and you're a Democrat and you don't vote or you don't go to the polls, or if you're a moderate Republican that has decided that they're going to leave the GOP because of Trump, if you don't vote, you're going to have to get what you're going to get. And it's not like Trump is being circumspect about what he wants to do.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, one of the things about fascists is that they actually tell you what they're going to do. And even though fascism is not working as a concept, because first of all, name your top five fascists. Okay, nobody can do that. I mean, old people like me could pull out Mussolini, but beyond that, I think there's
There's one that's very famous. Old Adolf usually gets number one with a bullet.
Yeah, but you know, this is like the thing like on social media. When you start calling somebody Hitler, you've essentially lost the argument, right?
Godwin's law, yeah.
You know, I think, right. So it's, you know, you can talk about Trump and Hitler in the same breath, and I get it. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, they were both dictators. And if you're going to go ahead and say he's a fascist, that's a fancy word for a dictator.
Yes.
And so why don't you just take him for what he is? If he's telling you he wants to be dictator on day one, chances are he's going to like it. He's going to probably want to do it on day 2, 3, 4, and 5, or pick and choose his spots to be a dictator. So my point is this, the election is going to be an election. It's not going to be, you know, Bush v. Gore in 2000. You're not going to be saved by the Supreme Court. You need to go out and vote. And if you support Trump, you need to vote for him because this is going to be a very tight election. And if you don't want to be president, you're going to have to vote too, because no one's going to save you from yourself at this point. And I think that to a real extent, to be honest, I'm happy it's going to be that way, because if America wants Trump, then they're going to get what comes with him.
Yeah.
If they want Biden, they're going to get what comes with him as well. It needs to be a choice. It shouldn't be taken out of the system, which is why it was 9-0 today in the Supreme Court.
Yeah. And that was really the only question with that ruling, was whether or not it was going to be 9-0. And it was 9-0. I think that's probably for the best going forward. All right. One last thing here and I'll let you go.
Sure.
Let's go forward. Let's go 8 years into the future, because we look at the modern Republican Party and we see one that has very much morphed. Donald Trump came in, brought a bunch of people that don't normally vote in Republican politics, that is a part of a coalition that has proven that it could win the White House. The Democrats have yet to have, they had a little bit of a situation with Bernie where you saw the progressives understood that they had a very important part of this coalition. Biden had to tilt more that way, especially during his presidency, to make them happy. Now they are very upset. The Gaza progressives are extraordinarily upset, and we'll see whether or not Biden really pisses off the immigration progressives, because that looks like that's going to be the next on the list. Where do you see the Democratic coalition in 8 years? Do you buy the progressive defections, and do you buy some of the ethnic defections with Black and Latino voters?
I think once you take Biden and Trump off the table, this becomes a very different landscape. The question is does Biden have a coalition that can coalesce around somebody else? My guess is that a moderate Democratic governor could pick that up. Okay. So it's possible that that coalition holds together, but you end up with not just a Kamala Harris as a vice president who's more progressive, but a more outspoken vice president.
Yeah.
I still think the top of the ticket has a chance to hold in a Biden world. And I think it's pretty clear that Gavin Newsom is betting on that. Gretchen Whitmer is betting on that. There's a bunch of them who are betting on Biden being the party. Buttigieg is betting on that. But then you have people like Kamala Harris, who's clearly betting on a more progressive party. And so if she runs from the left, she might be able to win a nomination someday. Might not. She was not a great candidate.
No.
Okay?
No.
Candidates
kind of a disaster. It blew up before the starting line on Iowa.
Yeah. I mean, on paper, like, she should have really been great. I mean, she was all ready to go and, like, you know, had – anyway, didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
And it probably won't happen for her because it's – we've seen her, right? But I think that coalition could hold together, but it ends up moving from, let's say – 1 point left of center to 2 points left of center. Okay. The MAGA coalition is actually really fascinating. And I think that one of the things we do as political scientists is we talk a lot about realignment.
Yeah.
We kind of blew it off when Trump won happened because we're like, well, okay, that was pretty fluky. I mean, you know, how could that have possibly happened? But we're now seeing that coalition really take over the party.
Yeah.
Okay. There was an actual primary with actual candidates that were running as traditional Republicans to pull it back. We got the 1v1 in an establishment Republican versus Trump.
Yeah.
And it didn't go anywhere. So I think MAGA is the party. I don't think Trump is wrong here. I would debate whether or not it's 47% to, 97%. Yeah. But, you know, that's just Trump hyperbole there. So I think that when you're looking 4 and 8 years ahead, the Republicans are much more likely to nominate a MAGA person than the Democrats are to nominate a full-on progressive like Squad. Like, I don't think Squad ends up being the party, because I think they're actually going to lose a couple of people along the way. We'll talk about it another time. But I think MAGA holds.
Yeah.
And I think you end up with a J.D. Vance, or you end up with people like that of their ilk, who have to at least go down to Mar-a-Lago, kiss the MAGA ring, and then get the endorsement to go forward after Trump. If he loses this time around, he will become the Don Corleone of the MAGA, family, right?
I mean, either way, he's the guy. Yeah, we're past that point. Yeah, he's going to be queuing up the Mar-a-Lago iPad,
because I think I think that we end up in a place 4 and 8 years from now where the Republican Party does nominate a MAGA person, because that's where the people are.
Yeah.
Okay. The difference is with the Democrats, that coalition is not as homogenous as the Republican coalition. Okay. There are different groups of people in the party who are Democrats, who are still there, who are more closer to moderates than there are in MAGA. MAGA is pretty strong, and it's pretty clear the moderates are much narrower than the Democratic Party. So we'll see where that ends up. But I think that if you're a betting person, in 4 or 8 years, MAGA will nominate twice, and then you will probably have at least one center candidate for Democrats, if not two.
Yeah, I think the question is going to be exactly who that is, right? And whether or not the Whitmer can hold, whether or not Newsom is somebody that translates beyond California, which I have my doubts about. But
sure.
Yeah, I agree with you that MAGA is the animating element of it. And I think what's fascinating is what made MAGA, what defined MAGA as a far right element of the party was immigration. And now immigration is like dead center, where you see sizable numbers of Democrats saying that they're for deportation, let alone shutting the border down. Right. So if that's center, then MAGA is kind of a center right coalition, aside from, you know, whatever a racial animus will come with, white voters without a college degree. In general, the stuff that they're for is a pretty traditional Republican center right, aside from immigration, which was like the Pat Buchanan element of 92. But now 12 years later, 30, whatever years later, that's
it's been a while.
Yeah. That's now mainstream. So it's like, I don't even know how to define MAGA on a traditional flywheel.
It's mainstream because the issue right now is mainstream.
Yeah.
They built that issue over a number of years. One of the things the Republican Party does very well, and much better than the Democratic Party, is messaging. And one of the things that they decided to do was, is no matter what they were getting pushed back on, whether they were called racist or, ethnocentric or whatever fancy word you want to use for dictators and fascists, the same thing. They stayed on the issue, and the issue got worse. So they had two things. Number one, they were disciplined. And number two, the facts on the ground changed.
Yeah.
And so to me, that issue is a point in time issue. I don't know if that's a long-term issue for them, because it will ebb and flow. And so if they win, they're going to have to own it.
Yeah.
Right. And so if they own it and don't fix it, who do they blame?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, at some point you either close the border or you don't close the border. If Trump wins, he's going to close the border. That should fix it, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really fix the underlying immigration system. So, but they may not care. I mean, as long as there's not a lot of people coming across the border, they may not care about the immigration system.
Yeah.
They just care that there aren't a lot of immigrants coming through undocumented.
Yeah.
They have lightning in a bottle with one issue right now, but I don't know that that translates 4 and 8 years from now. It's certainly right now, though.
Yeah. And it was the issue that got people out of their doors. And I don't know. I don't know who this really benefits, but my perspective after I went down to the border was that we really need to talk about border and immigration as two complementary but separate issues, because you can have the best immigration system in the world, and it's not going to fix the fact that the border security needs to exist, if even just to get bad actors like literal cartel members and stuff like that to stem that problem. And you can have a really, really secure border, and it's not going to affect the fact that we do have a labor shortage in America, and a lot of people want to come to the shining city on a hill and build lives that benefit us. So it's like you can't out immigration the border, and you can't out border immigration. I don't think that the MAGA crowd cares about immigration that much. They're not there, aside from the coctopus pushing H-2B visas. The baseline populist element of the Republican Party is just like, I care about the invasion, quote unquote, right? But on the left, I just think they've been so absent on it that it's very, very telling to see that there's nobody there. And if you look at these kinds of issues, this would have been a Biden issue, a natural Biden, Senator Biden issue when he was there. This was the kind of stuff that he made a career being the first Democrat to take a stand on the thing that's not quite in the Democratic thing, but he's 5 degrees left of center on it, and he's really, really chesty. If that Biden still existed, I don't think that he would have got caught with his pants down on it, but we're here now.
Well, Justin, what you just said was actually very interesting and something I hadn't heard somewhere else. Okay. So this is why people should be listening to this podcast. This is a really smart piece of analysis and you only get it when you go there. I didn't understand this until I just heard it from you.
Okay.
These are two issues. Okay. The border and immigration.
Yeah.
Right. The right is really interested in the border.
Yes.
The left is very interested in immigration.
Yes.
Okay. So when Biden thinks about this, he thinks about the border as part of immigration.
Yeah.
When Republicans and MAGA think about this, they think about the border and immigration might have some piece of it, but we don't really care about it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. We'll figure it out.
So that's the way through. Okay. The way through is to reframe the issue and say, look, we understand that our friends on the right are interested in this border and we get it. But there's also an immigration issue, and that's the underlying cause for this. We can solve the border issue, but we won't solve the immigration thing because any way you fix the border, people will always find a way. Like money always finds its way into politics.
Yeah.
People always find a way to immigrate if they have to. So we can talk all about shutting down the border, but we need to deal with both of these things. So you should say yes to border control and then say what we really need to focus on is immigration. We need to have a comprehensive plan. The problem is that the issue at the border is so intense right now that if you don't solve that first, you can't have the other piece.
Yeah.
This is what George W. Bush tried to do. And then he got pushed back because of, you know, immigration. Like everyone's tried to figure this out. But what it really comes down to is it's two different issues. And both parties look at it and say, well, I care about my part of the issue, but your part of the issue is kind of bullshitty.
Yes.
And they have the same problem, right? Because if you solve one and you don't solve the other, it all falls apart either way. But yeah. Democrats are not interested in the border. They're interested in immigration. And Republicans are not interested in immigration. They're interested in the border.
Yeah. Well,
so let's tune in Thursday and see if he's got an answer for that. You need to get on the line. I could get you on the line at the White House and say, oh, look, you know, this is really what's going on. If you game this out, you see it for what it is. It's really two different issues, not one issue.
Yeah. When it comes to Biden, I almost don't know what you do that. Like, I don't know. It feels like right now he's, you know, when you don't brush your teeth or you don't floss and then you're going to the dentist. And so you brush your teeth really hard and you floss and you're spitting like a pint of blood into the sink because you've totally slacked out on it. Like that's what Biden's doing right now on the border. Their biggest problem was that they out and out ignored it and said anybody who cared about it was racist. And now he goes to the border and he's like, hey, you know, there's this real problem with coyotes that like they're like, oh man, this is crazy. Yeah. It's like, you're just not
welcome to the party.
You're not credible there. The big thing, and I know I said I was going to let you go like 30 minutes ago, but we are going to let you go on this.
Keep going.
Does anyone get fired in this administration? Are they all just like appointed for life? Like, because Mayorkas.
Mayorkas should be fired.
Eject him.
Now he can't be fired.
Well, no.
He can't be fired now because they impeached him.
Yeah.
He should have fired him 6 months ago before he got impeached.
Should have. I mean.
After the midterms, he should have fired him. Just that's the time to change it.
Because that's the time-tested way you can say, hey, we made a mistake. We're going to get it better. You put the sacrificial lamb out there. Everybody watches it get slaughtered. You move on. But we haven't seen State Department problem. The State Department comes out and says, Israel, Gaza, most peaceful it's been in 20 years. Horrifying flames, tens of thousands of people dead. Like we see,
awful.
You know, the Afghanistan situation, both the State Department and the Pentagon on the hook for that. Nobody gets fired. The border's an absolute, it goes from not on the radar of the Democrats to the number one issue they need to deal with. Mayorkas is still there. Like this is,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you got to cut bait. And I don't know what the loyalty element is in that administration, but holy crap, that to me is the number one. And even if Mayorkas is getting impeached, do it. Make it hurt for you. Make it feel like there's no political reasoning why I would do it. It's because I do seriously take the border. I look at the border differently than I did before. That is the traditional move, but we haven't seen them willing to make it.
we're having a 2023 strategy session right now. Yeah. Because like that's what should have happened last year.
You're okay? Right.
Yeah. You can't fire anyone this year. Okay. Otherwise it's a weakness, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that Trump also reset expectations for people is that people were going to get fired.
Yeah. Okay?
If you fell out of favor with the president, you were gone, right? So Biden didn't do that on anything, right? And so how can you possibly mess that up? I mean, Mayorkas was an easy throwaway. There was definitely people who could have taken that job. After the midterms was the right time to do it. If you think about it, Don Rumsfeld got fired.
Yeah.
You know, and he was as well entrenched as you could possibly be in that administration, you know, and he got fired, you know, known unknowns and all the other quips and stuff like that. But he was gone and they were able to reset, you know, defense. And so if you don't fire people,
yeah,
you know, you're just keeping a coach that you're, you know, is coaching the Detroit Pistons right now. Like, okay, well, I guess we're going to lose, you know, 60 games this year. Cool.
Well,
you know? And so, but yeah. they can't do anything with that right now, but they should have seriously have done that right after the midterms. They should have cleaned house and saw where his polling was and said, you know what? No, we got to get rid of you. You're a problem. We got to get rid of you because of this issue. We're sorry. Thank you for your help. Here's a job at Boeing or something like that.
Well, at least Mayorkas comes off.
We talked to Nikki. We got you a job.
Yeah. At least Mayorkas comes off great on television. Oh, no, he doesn't. He looks like.
He doesn't.
He looks like a Bond villain and he talks like one. There we go. He
doesn't care at all.
He's like an AI video creation of what MAGA thinks the World Economic Forum is as a person. Like that's who Alejandro Mayorkas is and comes off as. So, all right. There we go. Michael Cohen, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find more of you?
You can find me at michaelcohen.us where all the things are. But don't forget, tomorrow
there we go.
Is your birthday.
But no, yeah, this is going to come out on my birthday. So I do. You mentioned that we can have a toast. So I have a Fire Eagle IPA.
I toast
here.
You, my friend Justin, and the podcast.
There we go.
And by the way, this may look like a Yeti, which has coffee, but it doesn't have it.
Yeah, there we go.
I toast you, sir. Happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for coming on, brother.
You got it. Thanks again.
And that'll wrap it up for us today. Politics, 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 written and hosted by me, Justin Robert Young, for Dog and Pony Show Audio in Austin, Texas. If you want to say hi to our old pal, Michael Cohen, go ahead and do so. Letter P, letter X, number 3, guest.com. Find us on TikTok. Find us on Instagram. Find us on YouTube. On TikTok, it's Justin R. Young. Instagram, Justin R. Young. YouTube, it's Politics, Politics, Politics. You can find us on X. The show is at PX3Tweets. Justin R. Young is my personal Twitter account, and you can see us live on Twitch, px3live.com. Share this podcast with your friends, family, and clergy, px3podcast.com. Support us with a one-time donation of any monetary value that you deem reasonable. PayPal is at paypal.me/payjury. Venmo money's not real. And that's been confirmed by like clerics, scientists. There was that one scene in Oppenheimer where they were but Venmo money isn't real. So it's clear. Go ahead and prove it to yourself. Send me $5, Justin-Young-20. Cash App is PX3 Cash, and you can send me anything you'd like in the mail. P.O. Box 153184, Austin, Texas, 78715. Of course, you can only get our bonus content at TakePoliticsSeriously.com. $3 tier gets you 2 bonus shows per week, covering all the news that we missed on our free podcasting schedule. And you get that plus your name read at the end of the show if you are part of our Titanic $10 tier, including Sam, John, Niemeister, Edwin, Brian, and vote Gloria Young for King of the New World Order, Edison, Jeremy, a dog named Checkers, Sarah Genie, Spider, Matthew, Dr. G, Dustin, Brad, D-Laser, Nick, just another pilot, middle-aged Mike, Utah, Jimmy Montana, the Jen, Alo, D-Really, Andrew, Lisa,
Fat Tony's PJs from New York, Devon, the CFP, Gloria, my mom, Grayzone, Peepaw, Jay, Neil, Yield Pinball Shop, John, DP4, Bongo, Neil, His Nerdiness, Charles, Audrey, Stole Adler's Spot, Darren, Idris, Arslanian, Berkeley, Steven, Nomadic, Terran, Molly's Delightful Demeanor, Adam, Chief Andy, Robert, Casey, and Paul. You want to be part of that crew? That elite squad? Head on over. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. And that wraps it up for us. A happy Super Tuesday to everybody. I will see you on the Patreon feed to break down all the nitty-gritty details. And we are back here for State of the Union coverage at the end of this show. Busy, busy, busy calendar. That wraps it up for us today. Until next time, this is your old pal Justin Robert Young saying... Some shows talk about politics, others talk about politics, and still more discuss politics. But this is the only show that dares discuss O3.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.